Hey, welcome to the Endurance Mindset Podcast with me, your host, Brad Caronarthur. I'm interviewing a range of people, mostly endurance athletes, about their mindset in racing, in training, and life in general, to get a better understanding of the psychology of willpower and mental toughness. In this episode, I interview Alex Orme, who's a woman of many talents. She's a photographer by trade and a gun athlete in her spare time. Lately, she's been putting her efforts towards adventure racing, but in a previous obsession, was into mountain biking and has done many a 24-hour race. Alex was in the team with Tom Brazier from episode 1, who competed in the 9-day adventure race in New Zealand called God Zone. So we can go into more detail about that, but from a different angle. I recommend checking out her video of the race, which I've linked in my blog, theendurancemindset.com. In this chat, we talk about morale, how it ebbs and flows in long races, and how racing affects your perspective on life, among a lot of different things. I got some really good insights out of our chat about the nature of mental toughness, which increasingly I'm thinking is more about being able to tell the difference between what's good for you and what's not, rather than the opposite idea, the common one of just blindly being able to put yourself through whatever. But anyway, I'll do a summary inside episode another day. But for now, let's just get straight into the conversation. Today, I'm here with Alex Orme to talk about the endurance mindset. Alex was part of the same God Zone team as Tom Brazier from episode 1, which was the 9-day adventure race in Fiordland, New Zealand. They did a kick-ass effort of coming third in the international division. And what we got to talk about with Tom was not sufficient to describe how insane that race is and how amazing.
No.
So I'm keen to hear a bit more.
Okay. Yeah.
Tell me about that video. I saw you, the video you put together is bloody incredible.
Yep. Okay.
And like, not only is it just incredibly scenic, you want to be there, like climbing these mountaintops back down into the valleys. Yep. But the thing that struck me about it is you go from this headspace, or this, you can hear it in the tone of your voice, about like how pleased you are to be there and how good it is.
Yep.
And then suddenly, wow, like all hell's broken loose and you just feel like it just sounds like you're in a lot of pain and you're struggling through something.
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate.
What transitioned there? What happened?
I guess the thing is about all that footage is that it wasn't even, I mean, they're all the good bits. They're all the bits where I was like sort of in the right mind frame to actually pull out the GoPro and video something. So there's a lot of footage missing because at the time I was just like, you just had to just put one foot in front of the other and just keep trudging along.
So you're not thinking about GoPro when you're thinking about actually getting through the race.
Pretty much. Yeah. There were other priorities. I think, especially that last video, I played it back, but I was pretty, like, even when I was recording it and talking to the GoPro, I was pretty close to tears. And I thought, like, for me, I don't cry very much at all. I'm not a crier. But in God Zone, like, I cried a few times, mostly towards the end of the race. I think it was because I was so emotionally and physically exhausted that it's just like a reaction to the environment. It's not necessarily that I was thinking sad thoughts but it was just like a physical reaction. Mm. Like the first time we got to the top of Percy's Pass, which was just like this. We basically got to the end of this fire road up a mountain, and then there were 700 metres of marked track, which seemed like they hadn't actually put a track in, or they were going to eventually, but, you know, they hadn't got around to it.
It was on the map.
Yeah. But anyway, so we had to hike a bike up this track, and it took us 2 hours to move 700 metres. Like, we were just so exhausted after that. And we were racing the cutoff. So there was a 3 a.m. cutoff to get down to the paddle area. So we had to we had to keep pushing and keep pushing, and then we got to the top and I just stood there and just like, yeah, burst out crying. And it was, I mean, Tom and Paul were there and like sort of like stood around awkwardly, and I'm sure they were crying internally, but yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that I just, you just can't film. Like, and so, like, I looked at Greenhorns actually released another video, and they put in basically all the stuff that I didn't video, because I think they're just at a different level, so they were just, like, happy the whole time. Yeah, and so they actually videoed Percy's pass, and it looked quite enjoyable. But, yeah, there's just, there was a lot of stuff that, yeah, just... there wasn't time, or I just didn't feel in it to film it. Yeah.
So was it therefore a roller coaster the whole way through, and you're saying that like there were these points where you had these lows and then you're back up to a high, pull out the GoPro again?
Yeah.
It basically wasn't like a steady decline through the whole thing?
No. Well, it was... So, like, I guess for the first couple of days it was pretty good. Like, yeah, there's sort of always this slow decline. But in that decline, there's still, like, moments where you're like, wow, like, this place is amazing and I need to record that. Like, I need to capture this because I want to remember that. Okay. Yeah, but I think in any race, or especially God's Own, because it was just so long, like, you're always sort of on a decline. But, yeah, there's definitely points where, say, like, it felt like the first 5 days of the race we didn't really talk, and then we got to this point where the track sort of widened and we could walk side by side, and Tom and I ended up started talking, and I was like, this is what we haven't had for the last 5 days, and it was just so refreshing. And so that's kind of like it was like a pick me up in the middle of the race, where we're at a point where we're like, we've had enough. We can probably pull out now.
Yeah.
But just talking to your teammates is just such a uplift.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible the way it's always relative, isn't it? It's not about like absolute enjoyments or things like that. It's like you can find enjoyment even in the darkest place because relative to what you're going through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like... Totally. Yeah, it's all relative. I mean, you really lower your expectations about... you know, simple pleasures, your enjoyment, like, of food goes up exponentially, because you're like, any food is great food, because I'm really hungry. Any sort of, like, track that makes it easier for you to get through is a small win, even if it's just literally a meter. Yeah. You're just like, yes, like, that was great. And then you go back to trudging through mud or really thick scrub, and you're like, ah, well, you know, it was good while it lasted. Yeah, so there's, yeah, I think you definitely lower your, you have to lower your expectations of, like, your comfort levels. But once you do that, then you kind of are able to enjoy more and more sort of unenjoyable situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it that the thing is unenjoyable in of itself, or is it relative to what you're going through, it's... What do I mean by that? Like, what's an example of an unenjoyable thing that you might enjoy?
So I suppose normally, like in a normal situation, if I don't really like rock hopping, like walking along boulders or anything, because for some reason I feel like I can't balance. But at one point in the race, we had to walk up this riverbed and there were big boulders, and I was just climbing up all of them, like, having the best time. Yeah. And it just seemed, like, now it seems really bizarre, because I know if I went and did that right now, I wouldn't be very good at it and I wouldn't enjoy it. But at the time, because it was, I suppose it was novel in that particular spot, I really enjoyed it.
It was a break from all the mud and thick scrub. And
pretty much, yeah.
You're like,
I can flail my arms around and, you know, not get twigs everywhere. And Pretty much.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in this perspective aspect that you're talking about before, because it reframes things, puts in a different perspective. Being now is, what, over a month since you did it?
Yeah.
How does it affect your perspective on life as well? What's the relationship between doing events like that and...
I think you really start to enjoy the little things more. Like, I think so much in our life we take a lot of the things we do for granted, like going for coffee with friends or having a hot meal or being able to sit down. Whereas when you do a race, like an adventure race, you are constantly moving, you're not always comfortable, you're maybe always like wet and tired, and you can't just get a coffee because you're in the middle of the bush.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, those little things that you, like in regular day life, that you, yeah, take for granted, yeah, you start to appreciate a bit more.
Yeah.
And I think when I stop appreciating them is when I sort of decide that it's time to do another thing that'll make me appreciate it again.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the driving factors to like saying yes to another God zone.
Right.
and yeah, and then because I know I'm going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Because you get to this point, you're like, God, why am I taking for granted a hot shower?
Yeah.
All this amazing food that I can just buy on tap if I want it, and just like instant food.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, God zone brings that back into perspective.
Yeah.
Or things like it.
Yeah. I think doing races like that it sort of makes you appreciate everything a bit more. And I lost my train of thought. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Got another question for you around God race. I'm pretty interested in what's the dynamic like in the team with the three guys and yourself? Is that intimidating? What's it like?
No, it's not I will take that back. It's not intimidating in a sense that there's three guys and I'm the only girl. It's intimidating in the fact that I know these three people are very strong athletes, and sometimes I doubt my abilities compared to them. Like, Tom and Paul are phenomenal runners, and you know, they are pretty like high up on the athletic scale, and I would say comparatively I'm maybe, you know, half of what they are. But I think it was really interesting. So in October, before we did the God Zone in March, we did Wildside, which was only a 3-day race.
Only 3 days.
Yeah, only 3 days.
How much sleep in those 3 days?
1.5 hours.
It was
an aggressive sleep strategy. But that race, I actually suffered way more than God Zone because I hadn't put in the training.
Yeah.
And so after that, I put in a heap of training leading up to God Zone, and once we were there, I knew, like, I was sort of on par with them again.
Yeah.
Especially for the fact that it's not a fast race. Like, I'm very good at just keeping going, like, one foot in the other. I'm not a very good 10K racer. My marathon times are not very good. My running ability is very bad now. But I know that I could keep up with them in a race like God Zone.
Yep.
And I think, that came down to training. So I guess in longer races, doing God Zone now and completing it, I don't feel as intimidated by them as maybe like two races ago. But I think, you know, that comes down to commitment to training and actually, experiencing it. And I found it really interesting because there's always one weak member in your team, and I always felt that I was the weakest member. But through God Zone, it ebbed and flowed because at one point Tom, his toes, like the skin on his toes was like basically off, and I looked over and he looked broken, and I've never seen Tom look broken, and I was like, and it's terrible to say, but like at that point I was like, oh my God, like I'm feeling better than Tom Brazier right now.
Yeah.
this is amazing. And so it really, like, and it's bad, but it really picked up, like, my motivation, because I was like, well, now I need to be able to keep going because Tom's hurting. And you're sort of, I think you're sort of, you don't, like, there's always going to be a weak member, but you don't want them to sort of be more aware that they're struggling than that they already are. So you kind of just keep pushing on and you don't really acknowledge it. And you just like, come on, like, keep going. And then, yeah, so I think, yeah, like, we all had strength. And, yeah, so there was never really, yeah, so I don't really feel like, I didn't feel like they were better than me in that particular race. Yeah.
So thank you for, that was a pretty blunt, rude, straight into the heart of the question. And then I let you sort of like go and talk for quite a while. So
you did,
I appreciate you going at that. Because what I wanted to do there was really get to the heart of like what is clearly, no, they don't intimidate you.
Yeah.
You are bloody incredible. You have something there that most people would greatly desire, gender irrespective, as you say, to go out there with other really top athletes, people who are capable of going at it for 10 days and back yourself in that environment. It's just like an incredible mindset, full stop. And listening to you talking there, like trying to distill out of it, like, what is it? That moment in which you saw, wow, it doesn't matter about this physical aspect. At a certain point, just mentally, I can see, well, you know, you can't see the mental aspect on a person's physicality or anything like that. But then to see it like in the behavior or the attitudes or in the race of how things eventuate, to go, wow, it's an intangible thing here that I have and I can be very proud of. And then very cleverly as well, I know how to manipulate. It's a word that comes to mind that's completely wrong, but what I mean
like
is
harness.
Like harness the environment and work the environment to help other people out. Like the physical equivalent is like putting your hand under over their shoulder and helping them hobble along. But what you were talking about there, like when they're feeling down, is like creating environment in which a person who's feeling mentally weak is more able to like pick themselves up. Which is incredible, because like some people would be like, right, this person's struggling, I'm going to make a thing of it to help them. And it sounds like, well, you've discovered that like, no, that can make things even worse.
And it, well, I think it's from, I guess, personal experience, because like in Wildside, I was struggling heaps and no one acknowledged, the team acknowledged it. But I was really grateful that they weren't asking me, am I okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Like, all the time. Because I think in a lot of other sports, people, if they see you're struggling, they'll ask, you know, are you okay? And I don't know if it's like a being a girl thing. Like, a lot of guys will, you know, kind of coddle you. And I don't like that at all, because I don't want them. Yes, I'm suffering, but I don't want you to, like, you're not picking me up in a way that's helpful. You're just sort of acknowledging it and not being helpful at all.
Yeah, it pushes you back down again, because it's like this constant reminder of...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I remember like wanting to help out a mate, having the best intentions in the world. If he was going through some mental health problems. And because I kept on being so supportive, like that unnaturally supportive Brad... just came across as disingenuous and had the very opposite effect of what I was intending to do.
And particularly with that moment with Tom, like, I didn't want to be like, are you okay? Because obviously he wasn't. But so we ended up talking about like random topics like movies and what's your favorite book and sort of getting your mind off it instead of acknowledging it. Because it was always there.
Because, it's not going away. So
no,
it's
not.
Fixated.
Exactly.
Take yourself somewhere else.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's fascinating the way it works in that team environment. Because, well, you have that capacity to lift each other up or to drag each other down.
Yeah. A team dynamic is really important. And to have a supportive team is so much better than having, Yeah, having a supportive team is so much easier to race because you know 100% they're going to be with you and they're going to, they know, you're all in this together. And so to show some empathy or is just a nice thing to do. And I suppose as a teammate, I want to show that I understand them, but I also want to help, but, you know, we're all in this together, so if you're suffering, then we'll just work it out, and, because, you know, you're only as fast as your slowest teammate, so to get them to keep going, you need to be there for them, and...
Yeah, totally. Cool. So I'm interested in your cycling as well. You're a gun mountain biker, and do you do some road cycling as well? You're mainly...
I used to. Yeah, I actually, to be honest, I haven't cycled or been really into mountain biking or road cycling for a little while. Okay. But when I was like really into it, and I feel like I sort of get. I suppose it is getting obsessed. So I started. Like, I played hockey as a teen sport, and then politics got too much, so I started running because I'd started uni and went into IB and just, like, absolutely loved running. And then I got into mountain biking and just did that every single day. Like, loved it. And so, yeah, I think I've always, like... I sort of find races, and I'm like, okay, well, this is the next race that I'm going to do. And because it's a challenge and I just want to see if I can do it.
Yeah.
So with mountain biking, I started with the 3-hour rides and then it was 8 hours and then like longer distance races. And then I was like, oh, well, I'll try a 24-hour. And it's a totally different race to adventure racing. The shorter the race, you sort of, the harder you have to go. And I suppose for regular people, 24 hours seems like a really long time.
It does for me as well. I've never done anything more than 24, and I'm like, blowing my mind here. You talk about that as short.
I think I did the 24-hour after I had done my first, a couple years after I'd done my first 5-day adventure race. And that was my first adventure race ever. And that was also with Tom. And they'd done the GeoQuest, which is 48 hours, and they won it. And so they were, like, on this high, and they're like, oh, we're going to enter this 5-day race. And then, like, 2 weeks before, they couldn't find a fourth team member. And so they asked me, and I was, like, not very fit. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And it sucked. Like, it was really great in a lot of places, and it was because like the team was really great and it was that camaraderie and we were always having fun. But like day 4 or 5, we couldn't regulate our body temperatures, we were sleep deprived, and we had been short coursed in like a couple times, and so it was just like, oh, I just want this to finish. And then I'd sworn off. Well, I'd sworn off adventure racing, and secondly, I'd thought to myself, I can basically do any other race, like, doesn't matter how long it is now, especially 24-hour races, because I've done this 5-day race, and I didn't die.
Yeah.
So when I entered the 24, I thought back to that, and I was like, yeah, this will be easy-ish. Look, it wasn't easy. I'm not going to lie, but I had a goal. I'd sort of looked up the times and the laps of the win a lot the year before of my age group.
Yeah.
And sort of took her laps and then added maybe a couple more. And I was like, that is my goal.
Yeah.
I either did that goal or got like one more lap up of that, and so I was happy with that. And then it was like, just incidentally, I ended up winning my category. So
nice.
Yeah. So I guess it was always racing against myself. It was never racing against other people because I'd never done it before, and so I didn't want to put that pressure on myself to have to chase people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think...
It's a bit of a goal of mine to get to that headspace one day. I don't know, because I've never been... Like, the times I've tried to race a person in a long-distance race, I've fallen apart, I got so stressed that I just couldn't handle it. And so I'm like, I'm just going back to the just racing myself kind of thing. And it does make me wonder if... I don't know anyone... I've never had a conversation with someone who is in that, like, zone of, like, they're super competitive over, like, a 24-hour period.
Yeah, Jess Douglas.
Yeah.
Amazing racer. She's an amazing mountain.
Note to self.
She's like a 24-hour like world champion. I think she's retired from 24 hours now. But she was there and I was like, maybe I'll keep up with her. And then the first lap out, she was gone. And I was like, well, nah, we'll just, yeah. And she ended up overlapping me like 5 times. So it's like,
well,
Gun.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was unrealistic to sort of compare myself to anyone else in that race. Which is different. I mean, it's different for every race. I think with adventure racing, I definitely don't race against other teams because I don't care. I know where... Well, it depends on the race. I think for me personally, I'm not as fussed to get to the podium or close to the podium. I just want to do the best I can.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then, like, another... and it's different again because the second 24-hour race I did, mountain bike race, I had a certain number of... had a distance that I wanted to get, so I figured out how many laps I needed for that. And there were a couple girls that entered, and so I sort of was competitive against them, but it turned out like the girl that I thought I was racing, she was in the pits next to me, and her support crew was, and basically my crew lied to me, and because I'd thought she was literally like 10 minutes behind me the whole time, and they were like, I got in at sort of like 5 a.m. and they were like, actually, you know, Leah's gone to bed, you're like 3 laps up. And I was like, oh, thanks. Because I'd wanted to stop at those points. And they're like, no, she's like right behind you.
Whoa.
I can't believe you lied to me. But I'd also, from the previous race, I know that there's like future Alex, and future Alex's priorities are way different to past Alex, where... Past Alex hasn't raced yet, but knows that she will probably do these things and not want to continue.
Yeah.
So my past self told my pit crew if I told them that I wanted to stop to just keep pushing me.
To do something
to keep going.
That would be encouraging you to... And so they did what you...
Yeah, pretty much.
And I love that your current self didn't even think this could be a trick.
Yeah, exactly.
They nailed it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's really sneaky. so I guess, and I think Tom talked a bit about it. Like, you go into a race... And you have this drive to continue because part of your brain is like, well, the person that I was before the race knew that I could probably finish this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to trust them even though I feel really, really crap right now.
Yeah.
So, it's always this weird drive to, like, push.
Yeah. That separation of self and, like, to appreciate that, like... Past self wanted this, current self wants this, but I'm going to trust in that rational self from beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the rational self, because sometimes you're just completely irrational. You don't feel irrational.
Yeah.
You feel very sane, because you're like, well, I'm trying to listen to my body, but I'm also trying to override it.
Right.
Where do I, who do I listen to?
How do I, right now I have information that bloody rational Alex didn't have. So I am the one that's right.
Yeah,
I know more than that other Alex. And therefore I should stop. But if you've ever had that experience of stopping and then finding out,
terrible. Yeah. And I think that's like, you don't feel bad in the moment, but you feel bad for a long time afterwards.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, and I think that's also another part of you, which is like, you will regret this if you stop.
Mm.
So like 7 days into God's Own, I was like, maybe we will pull out. And then another part of me is like, well, we can't. And also, as the girl on the team, I don't want to be the one that initiates being like, hey, guys, like, maybe we should stop. Because I don't want to feel weak. And I know a couple other teammates will back me up, but I don't want to be that person that initiates it.
Right.
Yeah.
That you say that in a way that makes me think that gender is both a positive and negative like factor in your mindset. Like you're using it there as something to bore you and go, no, I don't want to. Like there's some stereotypes here I want to break through, but like it couldn't at the same time. Those stereotypes
it still perpetuate. Yeah. No, that's true. It's hard. I think there's always going to be gender involved. And I think if you don't have two girls and two boys on your team, then it's always going to be a gendered thing. And even if you don't think about that in the moment, I think it's still sort of there later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't like that, but yeah.
So your preference would be for teams that have that balance anyway, like that's...
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't mind competing with three guys. Yeah. And that's fun. And I think for me personally, I don't mind because I know my teammates and they're friends. And so it's not... And, well, I think it also comes down to the availability of other women. And, like, there are very few people, like, women who race these kind of races and want to do this kind of crazy stuff that you are limited. So if they're busy, then your default is to go to another guy, like, have a guy on your team rather than another girl. I think for me, it's more like friend preference and then, if there's another girl, great. But mostly it's the availability of whoever. Yeah.
Right. That's a bit because in the space, like the prevalence of men and women in the sport is there's more men. And so like there's a possibility that you end up with that. Like there's a higher chance you end up going to a guy than a girl.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really interested in like, what is driving that? Why is there a difference in the prevalence rates? When it's something that women are so kick-ass at, when you think about, like, them at that top end, like, on a level peg with men competing, you'd think it'd be something that's attractive to be like, yeah, I want to go and stick it to the man and show him that I'm just as good. Mm. But then maybe there's an element of, because it's hard to capture what it is that you need to be in that space, like people are like, well, that looks like, I don't know, I don't know how I'd get there, so I'm not going to try or something like that.
I think there's a few things. I think there's like mental toughness, and I think that is not very common, especially in... Like, if you're doing a five-day race, like, people think about a 24-hour race and they're like, that is going to be hard, and that's the mental barrier. But I think there's not a whole heap of people that are like, I really love to suffer.
Yeah.
let me suffer as long as possible. Like, and then so that's one aspect. So the mental aspect is like, I think it's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
So that's a barrier. But then there's also... Because adventure racing is so... You have to have so many skills to start. I think it's overwhelming for some people.
Right.
And I suppose, like, some people...
Hey, just to stop you, because for people who've not done adventure racing before, they might be curious about what all those skills are. For example, okay. I think in a lot of this, because we end up jumping straight to the mental and skip over all the physical things. It might be interesting to know, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's like a mix of hiking, potentially running, mountain biking, pack rafting, which is like an inflatable kayak essentially, then whitewater skills, rope skills. So we did abseiling, then you're doing caving. I haven't, but in some particular races you might need to walk across like ice. I have crampons and ice picks to walk across.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Ice, which is crazy. You need rescue skills, like swift. So we did a swift water rescue course before we did Godzone.
Yeah.
Because we've heard about the rivers there. And, like, they're just, it could be flowing, like, raging river at one point and, like, really dry the next.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and just, like, a whole heap of sort of, and then you need to know basic how to camp. And then how to have food and, basic camping skills.
Nutrition as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I say nutrition, but, like, to be honest, we ate so much junk.
Right.
Like, yeah. Which, I mean, it depends, like, who you're talking to. But my preferential race food is nacho cheese shapes, so
yeah. They're
pretty great.
Yeah.
Or beef jerky. Yeah, that's awesome. Also good. Yeah. So.
And then navigation.
Yeah. And navigation. Yeah, sorry, I don't do the navigation.
Obviously.
Yeah. Obviously, I don't do the navigation because I didn't mention it, but that is also very important.
Yeah,
it's just like a whole heap of skills that I think some people think it's a bit overwhelming. Yeah. And I think, for me personally, the logistical side of it is really overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because you get crates and you have to figure out when you're going to see those crates and what's going to be in them.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to plan, but you also have to guess.
So high barrier to entry. I think that's where we're at.
Yeah,
like there's
so
much that it's intimidating.
Yeah, and it's also very costly.
Yeah. So racing is probably on the extreme end of the spectrum of high barrier to entry.
Yeah.
I think any given... Like, there's a lot of other endurance-type events that are similar that a person could just look at it and just visibly it just looks so absurd that you're like, nah, I'm never even going to go near that.
Yeah.
Like, why would I even try?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, and I think that comes down to... And that, yeah, so, I mean, besides skill set, that comes down to mentality,
right.
I think, yeah.
Yes.
And so, so coming back to adventure racing, not only are there all those barriers, but then... That's the mentality, and I feel like women have more inhibited by that mental aspect than I think male or guys are.
Right.
Yeah.
Like this is we see just more generally men are assertive.
Yeah.
And like it plays out in the workplace and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It can also use some words like arrogant and overconfident and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it turns out endurance sports can be a healthy space in which to have that overconfidence because things that on the surface seem absurd actually turn out to be very doable if you just throw yourself into the
situation. You just have to trust that you are going to, I don't know, you have to trust yourself and your team members to help.
Did you ease into it, like that trust, like... Did that come from a very young age for you, or was there a point at which you were like, you know what, I'm going to do some pretty out there things, like a transition into this sort of ultra space?
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely transitioned, and I think that was, it was more to do with my friend circle becoming, because we were all, like, everyone sort of curious about different sports, and so then I think we all wanted to push the boundaries of our different sports, and so I was involved, like, I played hockey when I was younger, but there's nothing like super intense about but then running, like, I think running was definitely my gateway drug, basically. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Everyone, you're on heroin now, then?
Yeah, we don't talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just remember, For hockey, you don't really take... I never took running, like, a separate... It was never separate from hockey. Like, I ran because I played hockey and I needed to be sort of fit for that. But then when you separated, like, just running, and you're like, I'm running... I don't know why I'm running, but I'm running.
Yeah.
And then all my friends are running. And then you do something like Inward Bound, where you run for a long time. And I remember my first Inward Bound, and it was only like, it was only 30 Ks.
Yeah.
And I say only 30 Ks.
Yeah.
But it was the longest I'd ever run. It was the furthest I'd ever run. It was like the longest time I'd spent running. And I was just so exhausted after it. But I like loved it.
Yeah.
And that was the, I think that was one of the moments where your friends who have also done this are like, I really enjoy that too.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, so what's the next thing? And so you just kind of progress from there.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very organic thing. Like, yeah, you're always just like, well, if I can do that, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
And then your friend circle sort of, it maybe evolves, and you might find more friends that are, you know, higher up the rung in the more endurance level. But then you find that yourself, you're like, oh, I'm on the same level now. And then you just keep sort of going up endurance levels and then pushing more and more boundaries, I think. Yeah.
It reminds me of a bit of an analogy to starting a fire, or in general, any given chemical reaction, where to start any chemical reaction, like everything is in a stable state, right? Like it's just floating around being chill. To get a reaction to take place, you need a bit of like energy to get it up, a couple of energy levels, and then things can react, and then like boom, they take off. And like, it sounds like... the same is true for when a fire starts, and then you get enough heat, and then wood and oxygen just keep on reacting with each other, just like keep burning and burning. And the friends and the events and everything like that is kind of like,
they're like
how much fuel there is around you
to sure.
like, and how big that fire can get.
Because you're... Yeah, exactly. Because the more your friends get involved, the more things they're like, hey, do you want to try this? And hey, do you want to try this? And you're like, oh, well, I've never done that before. So, yes. And then, as you say, the fire grows. And then, and then you end up, trying a whole heap of things. And then you can put them together to potentially enter another kind of race.
Yeah.
So,
I feel like the fire starting for me, I remember a day where I ended up going out for a longer run. I think I was like 14 or 15 and ended up running 16K, and just my mind was blown by, I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah.
Holy crap, I'm not even that dead.
Yeah.
I'm sore.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wow, I wonder what else is possible, and start bouncing off.
Yeah.
Do you remember a moment like that for yourself? Was that the 30K inward bound?
It goes back actually for like way when I was, I think it goes back to when I was really young, and I wasn't very fit and I wasn't very active, and one day I just decided that I would run around the block, and I literally got down to the corner of a street and I was like, I was tapped out. I was like, that, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I kept persisting, and for a week I was going a little bit further, and then I remember running around the block and coming home and being like, Mom, I just ran around the block.
Yeah.
And she was like, cool, good job. And I was like, oh, you don't understand. Like, that to me was like my, I think that was like my moment where I was like, well, if I, you know, put my mind to it, then I can do it.
Yeah.
And then I think, like, I did forget that for a little bit, but then, I think one of the moments was, it was my first half marathon, and I'd never run 21 Ks, and I think the longest I'd run was 12 before that, and I was like, sure, we can try this. And I finished it, and like, I was like, well, I didn't die, and I kind of like that. And that was when I was like, well, I can probably go a bit further and go a bit further. And I think yeah, the challenge of, like, just racking up Ks was really, I don't know, it was kind of, it was really exciting.
Yes.
Like, I just ran more. And then I think there's also the aspect where you tell your normal friends, and they're like, why? Why would you do that? Like, what? And you're like, yeah. Like, I remember I ran the Deep Space Marathon on my birthday and then had, like, a party afterwards. And my friends were like, oh, like, happy birthday. You know, what have you done this morning? I was like, oh, yeah, just ran a half marathon. And they're like, what? Okay, crazy person. And, yeah, I think that's like it's like a more, like, positive reinforcement to just be like, yeah, I really like doing this. Because it's like, I guess it's a shock factor for your normal friends, but also it's sort of like a reward as well.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, my friend, these people don't do this, and it's something different that I enjoy.
Yeah.
That's like a novelty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like there's this interplay of the extrinsic and intrinsic motivation.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a couple of things there you talked about that's like extrinsic, the hockey, like the fun of playing with friends and then you become a better runner and you don't even realize it.
Yep.
Or the reinforcement from friends being like, bloody hell, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And the self-drive of that discovery of, wow, I can do that is more like on the intrinsic side. Mm. And it seems like the extrinsic is like what gets you started for a while. But then I feel like the intrinsic is what keeps you going.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, because there's only so many times your friends can be like, yeah, that's cool, until they're like, well, you're just a crazy person, so, like, whatever. Like, yeah. That's the standing for you.
I'm not even impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't impress me. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think definitely my personal drive is what keeps me going.
Right.
And has... Yeah, I've always had that drive to sort of push my body to its limits, and that goes with the mental aspect, is like, I think they're hand in hand.
Yeah.
And I think most of the time your mental state can override your body. Like, your body can do way more than you think it can. Yeah. And so being able to harness your mental toughness to get you through things is that's what I'm always, I think, doing race, like, adventure races is what I'm always trying to push the boundaries, like, where do I break? And I've never really broken, and I probably don't want to break.
It's
always, I suppose, that's my drive.
It's funny, it sounds tautological or paradoxical, I don't know which, because it's sort of the same thing. It's like, I want to use my mental toughness to discover my mental toughness, or I'm like, my interest in finding my limits is inspiring me to go and find my limits, but I don't actually want to find them because I kind of hope that I don't have any. Like, which is it?
I think it's just like, it's a little I'm not sure. It's probably I guess I say, like, I haven't found my limit yet, but it depends what your definition of limit is, because if you say breaking down on the top of a mountain, is that your limit? But then you keep going. So then I guess, like, you've found your limit and now you've just, like, broken another barrier and you're like, oh, well, I'll just keep going.
Full understanding of what it is.
But I think finding the limit would be, like, pretty scary, because I think that would be type 3 fun.
Right.
I think,
Well, coming into this, I was really interested to ask you about type 3 fun.
Right.
Because from the mountain biking angle, I think it strikes me as one of the areas in which you can go so quickly between types 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Type 1 being, it's super fun in the moment, you're going downhill,
woo,
like, you're just having a great time.
Yeah.
Type 2 being, you're bloody exhausted because you're kicking ass in your 24-hour race, but, like, you're in a world of pain, your friends are playing mental tricks on you to keep going, and you're thankful for them doing it afterwards. And then type 3, that moment of, like, I particularly raise this about the mountain biking, because you are moving so quick in among terrain, it's got a lot of hard things around,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you got a helmet on, but yeah. People do die doing the sport. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on what your definitions of the type 3 is, because for me personally, I would say that's still in the type 2 area, because you're still worried about the environment, but you know that you'll probably get through, whereas I feel like type 3 fun is like near-death experience, don't want to think about it for a few years, and it probably won't be fun when you look back on it.
Right.
Like...
Okay, so yeah. Just because you're wearing past the trees and rocks and there's a chance you could hurt yourself, it's more like...
It's still like not quite enjoyable, but I'm still on my bike, so it is enjoyable.
Right. Yeah. Definitely type 2. Then.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Because like some days I get the fear. I do a little bit of mountain biking, and I get what I call the fear, in the sense of like I just cannot will myself to even enjoy the... Well, I suppose it's the type 1 fun, isn't it? But because I just feel like, oh shit, something's going to go wrong today. Yeah. I'm just not in the zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that something that you just let happen to you and go, today's not the day, or do you find ways to overcome?
No.
Kind of.
I think it depends how sort of deep I am in training. But definitely more so nowadays, if I'm not feeling it, I probably will either shorten the ride or choose easier trails to kind of find that, because I never want to not enjoy riding, but I feel like sometimes it's just the day is just like, you're like, oh well, it's crap. So I don't know. I don't enjoy those days and I want to avoid them. So I guess sometimes I will try to lessen that by doing easier trails or doing something that I know.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're just like, oh well, that was a shit ride.
Yeah.
But I always know the next day might not be. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That is fascinating, because that is, I've just realized that's something I do in running but not in riding. Like, I'll be kind to myself.
Yeah.
So like the mental toughness is not just like a pure rigidity and like, it's like knowing when to go hard and when to go soft and moderating that. But I've just realized that I've always kind of been beating myself up on the mountain, that if I feel the fear, like, come on, Brad, you pansy, like, you're kidding me, it's just the Skyline track, like, out at Stromlo, that shouldn't be scaring you that badly, like, just, it's the luge, mate, just cruise down it. And I beat myself up, and then, like, the net effect of that is, like...
You make more mistakes, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really should be going on different trails on days like that.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, it's only happened in the last year or so where I do have allowed myself to do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not as competitive in mountain biking as I used to be. Like, I haven't done a race for a while.
Yeah.
And I feel like... I think I'm in limbo at the moment, because I either want to find my next obsession, because I went from running to mountain biking, and now that I'm in this limbo where I adventure race, which kind of encompasses everything, which is awesome, but you can't do everything all the time. So like I'm kind of trying to find the fun in running and riding again.
Yeah.
Which is taking a while.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do you think it's gone? Do you think?
I don't know.
I'm in a similar headspace. Yeah. That's part of what this podcast is about. Right, okay. Like, where did the fun go?
Yeah.
Why have I lost it? Why did I have it once upon a time?
Yeah.
I was like so into this. And nowadays, like, often get out there and I'm like, I've been here before.
Yeah.
I know what this is like.
Yeah.
There's nothing new to learn.
That's exactly it.
I'm going home.
I think, for me, I know I can improve my skills in mountain biking.
Yeah.
But for what I was doing, I didn't need, I didn't need to. I mean, you always should be improving. But, and then I feel the same. Like, I'll go to Stromlo and be like, oh, well, it's just the same trails over again. And
yeah.
And Yeah, it's actually, I think it comes down to also, I don't really do races twice.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, come to think about it.
Yeah, because I feel like I excel when I don't know trails, and even in running, I love races where I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
But then if I know where I'm going, I'm like I'm always thinking about, well, this is coming up and this is coming up and this is, you know, it's, yeah. And so I think now I feel like I've done everything in Canberra, so I'm like, well, I don't really want to do that right now.
Yeah.
I think I don't know how I'm going to find that passion again, and I don't know if it's going to be in a different sport, because I've tried, because I thought I might start doing a different sport. So I tried kayaking and like a little bit of whitewater rafting, but I actually hate falling in. And like, we were practicing rolling in the pool, and I finally got it, but then I went into the river and tried it once and then freaked out and like wet exited, and I was like, well, I never really want to fall in again. So I think, and then I tried rock climbing, but I actually hate heights, so I just haven't really found the next thing, and I think maybe pack rafting could be it.
Yep.
But you'd have to travel out of Canberra.
Yeah. Say so, go live in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. So I'm trying to. I'm trying to go back to where what I know, and then just start having fun with them a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're giving me this aha moment just before, when we're talking about mental toughness and then the being kind to yourself. And because when I think about mental toughness, sometimes I define it as like being able to know the difference between good and bad pain, for example. And you can mean that literally or sort of metaphorically for other things.
Yeah.
Of going, I know this won't kill me, this is okay, and I'm going to push through it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not hard because you know it's not bad for you. But it seems to go broader than that, in the sense that it's like knowing the difference as well between intrinsically motivated fun and sort of extrinsically motivated fun, and not forcing yourself to go through things that don't have like a reasonable basis for why you're doing it.
Yeah.
You can do some really absurd shit based on extrinsic motivation sometimes, and similarly with intrinsic. But knowing the difference is kind of the key to this endurance mindset of like the longevity of your like being in a sport relies upon you not losing the spark, the fire not going out, because you can tell the difference between something that's going to burn and something that's just going to peer out.
I think it's because, like, for me now, like, thinking about it, I think it's also because there's no personal motivation. I've got to this point where competitiveness isn't the be-all and end-all anymore.
Yeah.
And I think after a few injuries, I'm more wary of what my body can do, and I know that to get back to like a certain level, I'll have to put in more rehab-y, essentially boring exercise to do more intense stuff. And so I think, well, I mean, I've said yes to doing Godzo next year.
Right.
So that is like my new motivation.
Yeah.
And I actually, in the last week or so, I've actually felt a bit more personally, intrinsically motivated to start doing the boring rehab stuff so I can be the best competitor when it gets to March next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you are, your headspace is moving towards competition a bit as well, given it's like a second time round.
Yeah.
Because I was about to ask, like, when you exhaust the fuel that is the unknown, the newness, and you've been there, done that, you know it, like, what does the fire burn on next? And it sounds like competition a bit. But, like, it maybe needs to be something more nuanced than just competition, or is it, like...
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think it's bettering myself from the last.
Right, so it's competition with
self. It's competition with... Yeah. Because, once again, the New Zealand teams are just insanely good.
Right.
Like, insanely good. And I, like, I'm not... I don't really follow the top people in the sport, like Tom and Paul and stuff do, and they know everyone and they sort of know teams and stuff, but I've never been interested in that.
Yeah.
And so for them, I think they have teams that they look at and sort of compare us to, but for me it's all about being better than I was before. And I think because God's Own's in... I mean, because adventure racing changes all the time, it's the same, but it's not the same. Yeah. And so that, for me, is refreshing. Because I always have to do something different, I think.
What's better? I was just pondering it a bit because I think there's two types. Like, there's better in physically, like, peak of your game.
Yeah.
I've not interviewed someone who is much older yet, but I kind of look forward to doing that because there's going to be surely a different mindset there. But I'm getting a taste for, like, better given what you've got.
Like what, better physically or mentally or?
Well, kind of both.
Okay.
In that, like, yeah, I got to a point, sounds like you got to a similar point where you're like, I've been here, I've done this, I've expended huge amounts of time trying to be physically the best at this possible, and I no longer wish to dedicate the same amount of time to it, but I still want to be better. You always want to be better. And so better in the circumstances could be better mentally given what you physically got.
Or it could be
something completely different to you. So,
I think I feel like I've got the mental thing down. Like, the mental part aspect has gotten me through a lot of stuff where I was still fit, but I wasn't as fit as I could be.
Yeah.
So I think that part is okay, and I'm confident in that area. But, like, I always know that... I mean, you always know you can be fitter. And you could be better. And so I think it's really interesting because, so in 2013, I was like peak fitness and I was running marathons and like just, you know, I was really fit. And then after I graduated uni, it kind of sort of went a bit down and your body changes and you always think back to that time when you were the fittest. I've always tried to be practically fit, not like aesthetically fit.
Yeah.
And so I think the physical aspect is really important, but I also know I'm trying to separate the physical and the aesthetic. So I could be, you know, like 5 kilos heavier than I used to be, but I can still perform at the same level. And I think, it's more, for me, it might be like a female thing where it's like your body positivity and I'm trying to work on that as well. Like being kind to what my body looks like because I know that it still gets me through like a really long race.
Yeah.
I'm not as like, skinny as I was back when I was peak fitness, but I can still perform the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so. To come back to your question, I think, yeah, bettering my strength of my body is probably, like, the physical aspect is probably more important at the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And so doing, like, a more holistic training program that, like, works on all those things.
Yeah.
Rather than just being, like, run, amounts of cardio or something like that. And you're actually physically not as good as you could be if you... properly dedicated yourself to doing a physical regime.
Yeah, but I'm also kinder on myself because, like, I'm, well, my partner says I'm the laziest athlete he knows.
Right.
So
I've been told that as well.
Yeah, because I really enjoy sitting on the couch. But I also know that if I don't move and if I don't do something active, then I just don't feel very good. I suppose that's the mental, you're always working on both, you're trying to better both because you're trying to balance your thoughts on what you could be with where you are.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to not compromise your mentality, I don't know, you're always trying to, like, balance out where you are with what you think you should be. And then trying to get there, but in a nice way.
Right.
Like a healthy way.
Yeah. With a balance between the person now the person in the future.
Yeah.
This is it's like an interesting recurring theme in all this, this idea of being pretty mindful of that future person, what their thoughts, and yourself. What their thoughts, desires, wants, needs are all going to be, and how best to balance that with your current state of mind.
Yeah.
And then willpower being that thing that you withstand shit now to make that future person happy.
Yeah, it's... Oh, willpower is probably my biggest weakness.
Right.
Yeah.
See, that's fascinating. Yeah. Like, that is the core of why it's so interesting. Like, oh, I can do a 9-day adventurous.
Yeah.
Have no willpower. Yeah. Like,
honestly.
No, I believe you. Yeah. I totally do. That laziness sense of, like, sometimes exercise is my way of making laziness okay because I'm like, I want to be really lazy later on. I want to drink beer and do nothing. Yeah. I should probably go for a run now.
That's why I have to set goals or races because my willpower is so bad that I need something to keep me accountable.
Right.
And I need that accountability.
Yeah.
So even if it's just telling someone I'm going to do this, like, because, yeah, I mean, that's like with dieting, like someone tells you not to eat sugar for a week.
Yeah.
Because you'll feel so much better in a week and you won't have cravings. But, like, but then 2 days in, you're like, I really want something. Like, I really want cake. And then the person right now is, it's like instant satisfaction. But then, you know, like, it's really hard for humans to separate or sort of think about the future self with the immediate self and the immediate satisfaction with the future satisfaction.
Right.
Like, I need something in my future that I'm very, like, I need to be dedicated to stop myself from doing things that will hinder that sort of the steps, training. And so not eating cake every day and going and doing exercise every day because I know future self will be better and it'll be easier. So it kind of needs structure, otherwise I'm just like, it's like chaos.
You sound like pretty clever about that, like the thing about telling your friends at the race to be like, play mental tricks on me because it will help. I know, I appreciate it. That's an important part of who I am. And on the dieting one, I learned something fascinating from my partner Sarah the other day about traps in diets and what feels like progress but isn't, is like a lot of these diets, even if they're super successful and you like drop a lot of weight really fast and like that motivation comes from like seeing a better you or something like that, and like first of all you drop lots of water weight.
Anyway, no one knows about that.
If you get to a really fit state through some sort of speed diet, and then you have a really fit body temporarily because you got there through some sort of unsustainable regime, there's actually a backwards step in terms of motivation, because you now have like a image of what you could be like to always compare your current self to, and you just, after that point, you just crash. It's like a low of like, I feel inadequate compared to my previous
and self. That's what I've struggled with since like, since my peak fitness. I've always struggled with that vision of that vision of myself where I'm like, I know I was so fit then.
Yeah. It's this redefining better thing. What is better?
Yeah.
Because there's better in that very narrow view of like better only in the aesthetic. In that diet sense.
Yeah.
Whereas, and if you think of that as the only way you can think of better, you get in this mental trap where you're like, well, I managed to do that temporarily once. I can't sustain it. I'm a failure. I'm never going to be that, and then you just walk around as a shell of yourself going, I can't, I'm inadequate.
Yeah.
If you redefine better as, no, like, that was never a step in the right direction in the first place, better is purely a holistic, a sustainable, a moving forward, then I can be proud every day of each step I make. Yeah. It'll be slow, but, like, it's a different kind of thing to be proud about.
Yeah, exactly. It's separating the aesthetic from the actual, like, the ability to be able to do the same thing. It was like, even after, so even after, it's for example, after Godzone, I looked like a skeleton, like like my top half was like just a skeleton, my bottom half didn't really change, like that's never changed. But then I was like, well, because I've lost like 6 kilos, I'm just gonna eat whatever I want. And then you get to a point where you're like, I am at the point where I start, like, before pre-race or more, or, like, bigger and you're still eating stuff, like, you should stop. And then at that point you're like, oh, why didn't I just eat normal and healthy after the race, because then I would still be in a healthy, like, in that, like, visually, like, aesthetic.
And I found myself going, because I used that as my bargaining chip for why I was going to do the race, and I'm damn well cashing that check in now. And you're like, wow, okay. So
I cashed too many.
I've got to start again and redefine my reasons for going into type 2 fun or any kind of like hard place in the first place, because I want to come out of on the other side, or just in general, just with something more sustainable.
And definitely for me, it was never about weight loss or anything. That's just, it just happens because, like, you are 4 days into one of the stages of your race and you didn't pack, like, as much food as you thought. And so you're just like, oh, well, whatever. Like, it's just, so, I mean, it's taken me ages, but it's, I'm comfortable with my body where it is, where I'm like, it'd be nice to be a little bit lighter, but I know it doesn't hinder racing, and especially adventure racing, like, it's actually good to have a little bit more fat stores, because you do actually lose a heap during the race.
Like, was it body temperature regulation?
I still got really cold, so and I think I don't know. It's, I think body image is a, I mean, it's not really an endurance-y thing, but it's definitely a part of athleticism and, and, like, you know, you're always striving to be sort of this image that you have of yourself, but you should, like, you, for me, you need to learn to be comfortable where you are and know that if you do put in work, then you can get to where you might have been, or this like sort of image you have of yourself. But at the same time, even if you don't get there, you could be, you could still achieve your goals without that sort of image being what you thought.
I'm affected by the body image stuff as well. Like, it's definitely something that I would call high GI motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like distinguishing between that and low GI. It's more like the sustainable one. Like, some days I do get excited about, and like, yeah, I'm gonna go do lots of exercise because it's gonna make me look amazing. Because I just like something made me feel like that would be the thing to do. And it doesn't last very long, and you crash and burn afterwards. It keeps recurring for me, and I don't 100% know why, but it seems like sometimes it's because I associate mentally peak athleticism with the image itself of physically what it looks like, of like the Adonis kind of body or something like that, but it's not actually... particularly for endurance, it doesn't necessarily mean...
No. Yeah. Actually, I'd really want to do a photographic portrait, like, series of, like, all the people that participate in adventure racing, because I think for women, one of the barriers is like, well, I look like this and I don't look like that, so
I have to be that
before
to participate.
Before I participate, and which isn't true at all.
No.
So we put on it's a made up thing that we put upon ourselves, and I think there are a lot of people trying to sort of break that sort of idea, that you have to be a certain weight before you can do a certain thing. You have to look a certain way because, you just have to do it. And I think, and that's, one part of the mental barrier is just taking that step to do it and then realizing that, oh, well, I look like this, but I still achieved what I wanted to do. So,
Totally.
Yeah. But, I think it's like a society thing, you know. We have this. We're bombarded with all these images of beautiful athletic people, and that's the goal. But in reality, you don't have to look like that to win races. And it's like, and it's funny. Even recently, it reminds me. My friend ended up winning her cycling race, and the winning jersey didn't fit her because they had an extra small jersey.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because it's like an assumption.
It's extra small. Yeah, that's...
Like, even, I remember even running in the North Face, like, UTA, formerly North Face, and I won my category, and I got this extra, extra small singlet that was way too small for me, and I was, I'm a size 10, like, it's a regular body.
Yeah.
And, I couldn't fit into it.
Bloody hell.
And I was like... It's like all these assumptions that...
Yeah.
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 It's
silly. I am similar because I'm 90 kilos and I am not made to run hundreds of kilometres, but I do.
Yeah.
And I've, like, come to redefine. I'm like, well, it's not as one-dimensional as one would think.
No.
Like, on the exterior, that doesn't make sense. And then I'm like... But on the interior, I think of myself like a high liter capacity engine car with like just a big engine
that
just like churns through a lot of food in races and like outputs a lot of energy, but like it's totally sustainable. You just like churn through it. Cool.
Yep.
I don't think I have any more questions.
Okay.
How are we doing for time? Hour 20.
Okay,
cool. Well, thank you very much.
That's okay.
Really appreciate taking the time for the chat, and it's awesome to hear about some of your exploits. And as always, you're very humble. You're like Cassie in that you're like, oh, yeah, you know, I just casually do these, like, 9-day races. Yeah. Bloody amazing.
Thanks, Brad.
Thanks for taking the time.
That's okay.
All right, that was it. A big thank you again to Alex Orme for that chat. I really enjoyed that, and I hope you did too. If you've got any ideas of other people you'd like me to interview, please get in touch via my blog or any other way that you know to get in touch with me. And I look forward to catching you soon.